Full System Testing Using Selenium with Eduardo Maltez.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and to run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. The podcast is sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results through its ClearMeasure Way methodology. And any companies needing fractional software leadership, go ahead and give ClearMeasure a call. They help in-house teams to establish quality and achieve stability and to increase speed. And so they've been a great sponsor of the show. And if you have any comments or questions for the show, send me an email at podcast@palermo.network. And the new video show is now 6 months old. And if you haven't heard of it or haven't looked at it, I invite you to join me on my Programming with Palermo show. You can search for, quote, Programming with Palermo in any of the podcast directories or on YouTube. And you can also find it on www.palermo.network. Our guest today on the show is Eduardo Maltez. He is a software engineer at ClearMeasure, and he has extensive experience in .NET, including Blazor, SignalR, Azure Service Bus, SQL Server, and all kinds of automated testing. Earlier in his career, he apprenticed under Jeffrey Palermo and is currently building automated full system tests for a large and complex software ecosystem at one of his clients. Eduardo, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. It's nice to be on the show after working under you for about 2 years now. And having been in this industry, I've got to say I've learned quite a lot. And it's going to be great talking to you about front-end systems testing with Selenium.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, I want to get into the full system testing and talk about Selenium and testing patterns there. But for listeners, just to get to know you a little bit, what was it that drove you to even pick a career in software and maybe milestones kind of leading you up to this point?
I'd have to say that like early on, it was just kind of like a decision in the moment that I decided to just sit at a computer and start learning, you know, just a little bit of programming, finding out what that is. In high school, I had taken a computer science elective where they just teach you the bare basics of Java programming and eventually object-oriented programming as a whole. And that sort of stuck with me in a way that I didn't really expect at the time. But as, you know, as I went further along with the studies, I sort of realized that I'm actually enjoying what I'm doing and have sort of an understanding that many others sort of don't take on to, like as early on as I did. And so I sort of took that sign as maybe I can find a career in this. Mm-hmm. So later on, I ended up graduating from Texas A&M, part of the Fightin' Texas Ed class of 2019. Nice. I got a bachelor's in computer science from the College of Engineering there. And while I was there, a sort of, not necessarily new, but definitely an up-and-coming sort of design practice at the time was test-driven development. I remember going through a lot of my more like software-oriented courses and thinking and them sort of hammering on early on that thinking in terms of tests and test-driven design would be a good sort of start in our careers. And that sort of stuck as a lesson to the point where I remember early on conversations between you and me, I found myself shocked that there were a lot of companies who hadn't even designed the test-driven design philosophy until like fairly recently. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I heard, I sort of got a little more curious into the test-driven thing, test-driven design and sort of automated testing as a whole and what capabilities we have now in the sort of modern software industry and what that sort of means. And where that sort of has led me now is working at my current client or working on a project that ClearMeasure currently mm-hmm. has under them. I was sort of point it towards their QA team, where they had about a year ago, they had started a full-on automated front-end systems testing sort of effort to try and wrangle this sort of huge software system. And they were just starting to think, maybe we should start automating some of our testing. Specifically, they're automating a bunch of QA tests focused on the front line, basically verifying a bunch of business requirements, a little bit of system requirements here and there. But that sort of exposed me to what a sort of large scale, sort of long-term support type of front-end full systems test project sort of needs to be like. And what I sort of gathered, not just from this client, but also from other projects where I've had to work with Selenium on other front-end full systems testing, is that you really sort of get the importance of defined acceptance criteria for a software project when you're forced to make a test using just the front end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to sort of take you through like a sort of very basic sort of path or sort of thought experiment. Like, just imagine you're developing this web application that just, it's just very, this is very simple. Just let's say you're going through like making purchases on some product, like you're just making your own website there. And you get this task, whether it's self-imposed or from upper management, saying we're going to go with acceptance tests through the front end. You go ahead and use this Selenium library and start developing automated tests for us. Well, you'll find very quickly that there are a lot of things that you never really think about when developing the front end or the back end that seem like they fit together quite naturally. But when you're trying to hook up this Selenium driver to it, there's a lot of, oh, how do I tell the Selenium driver that this is how you make a purchase?
Mm-hmm.
A sort of major pitfall that a lot of Selenium test projects go through is sort of how brittle these tests end up being for, like, admittedly, a huge chunk of the lifespan of the project. You're going to have very brittle tests because you're sort of thinking about this Selenium testing as like your normal everyday unit tests, where you're just making the test cases, not giving too much mindfulness of how these test cases are sort of coded.
I have a question about that. What is it about a certain bit of functionality where you would say, you know what, I need to use Selenium for this type of test versus just making it a regular unit test within unit? Why and how do you make those decisions in your head?
So when it comes to when you have like access to all that sort of all those testing environments, then yeah, it seems like you can make a unit test for just about anything when you sort of set your mind to it. When you're making the decision to make a Selenium test, that decision sort of comes from you're wanting to test not like the system itself, like I want to test this API controller, I want to test this homemade coding module for our website, but rather you're testing something that's essentially how you want a physical person or a physical or like a customer to use that product and how that affects your system.
Mm-hmm.
So you can make a unit test that tests, say, your like payments processor module, or a unit test that makes sure that your REST API is able to return the proper web pages. But that doesn't necessarily tell you that your website is properly functioning and telling you that a customer is able to navigate to www.myproduct.com,
mm-hmm,
and able to see a big button that says buy my product now, and clicking that button doesn't take you to a 404 or a 500 page response. Like, that's where you're making the decision to, yes, I want to make a full systems front end Selenium test, because now you're sort of testing what the product as a whole is doing, not just little bits and pieces that you're coding. And it also sort of exposes like the sort of blinders you put on yourself when you're too deep into the details. I sort of like that Selenium sort of acts almost as like a black box test for your system in some cases.
So these tests are best for deployed environments, right?
I would definitely say so, because you're going to be competing with a lot of resources if you're just using this as a tool to, say, make sure that like five different pieces in your code are functioning properly. It's less like the unit tests where you're going through a constant cycle of making a change, checking the test, seeing if it makes the test pass. Mm-hmm. And it's more of this sort of scheduled, repeated sort of reality check throughout the workday or work week,
yeah,
telling you that someone merged in some code in the team, and either that broke something in the system or it's all perfectly safe.
Well, speaking of all kinds of dependencies running on different servers and whatnot, just want to highlight one other project that you worked on. It's actually on the Microsoft's .NET showcase, and we'll put it in the show notes, but there's a system for a company, for a platform called ShowWorks that's in the Microsoft .NET showcase for Blazor, one of the early adopters of Blazor. You were involved with that. Tell us about the technology components of that were spread out that made Selenium testing, say, interesting.
Yeah, I would definitely say Selenium testing on that project was very interesting. The sort of reality about Selenium projects is that as they go on, they sort of smell like their own sort of side development project that just happens to be confined to your own project as a way of testing it. And so with different things like ShowWorks used SignalR messaging, Azure Service Bus, and a bunch of other different technologies to synchronize data between individual users' computers to an online sort of cloud platform, you find that there's a lot of instances where you need to be able to design within your Selenium project what like wait time is acceptable in terms of when data gets transferred that's sort of out of your control, that's sort of automated in its own sort of pipeline within the system. There's a lot of times where you're going to be repeating many tasks, such as in the example of ShowWorks. That project had an API in which it had to, the pipeline essentially involved interacting with an external data storage to then parse some data into different data models within that system and transform it into something that that web service itself could use and then host along its platform. You're sort of having to tell the Selenium test that all it cares about is that it hits that endpoint, and then at some point afterwards, you give it like a reasonable time frame. Let's say that's the constraining goal. It will have something shown on, say, like a home page that reflects that change. Or if you enter a certain URL, then there's going to be a table of data that reflected what it just did. And so there's going to be lots of instances in a Selenium project where it seems like it seems like cheating when you're like interacting with some backend services along the Selenium test, but all of that is just sort of setting up Selenium to say, okay, I've just set you up a clean little environment for you to try something. Go ahead and try it. And then that component gets tested and you're just using Selenium to check how that change affects the actual visual front end.
Well, that's a good point. And I'll show my age a little bit. But before automated testing was popular, these suites of manual tests would rely on, let's say, a database that had a certain set of data that was set up just right. And then if it was set up just right, we could go through a set of steps and check all kinds of things. But then afterwards, we need to reset the database and reset other storage back to where it was. With what you just said with Selenium, you said the test is setting up to get ready to actually execute. Drive that home. Does that mean that the Selenium tests do use a known state, or is the Selenium test completely responsible for setting its own self up?
So that sort of depends on like the constraints that you have within like the capabilities you're able to test. So for instance, my current client that I'm working on, they have like a multitude of different like hosted environments. And one of them happens to be where the Selenium tests sort of reside and get run on. And it's sort of operating under the assumption that this is like a sort of background. This is like the normal state of what it would be like in the normal production environments. It'll have all bunches of different data and whatnot, and it has to operate within those constraints. But when I was working on my previous project, which was ShowWorks, we had the capability to essentially have this testing environment that Selenium gets to essentially play with and destroy and do whatever it wants while it's doing its tests. And then we can tear it down at the end so that next time we have a release candidate, we can just spin up that environment completely from scratch and let Selenium sort of play around with the data all at once. Mm-hmm. So in that sort of case, you're sort of able to have each different test case in a Selenium test sort of set up the data for that test case. And of course, that comes with its own like cost benefit analysis of anytime you have a test setting up its own data environment, you're making, you know, database calls, API calls and all that, and that increases runtime. But there's sort of a reason why when you bring up Selenium or anyone brings up Selenium in terms of teaching it to new people, they don't really call it like TDD on its own. It's where we get into the realm of behavior-driven development or BDD. Mm-hmm. Where the Selenium tests are essentially are part of that testing cycle, but it's less about these little micro adjustments you make in the code to make a test pass, and more so about you implementing new features that you've planned out and defined well in advance before you've put code into environments.
Something you said early, what you used the word brittle. You said a lot of these are brittle. What is it that tends to make some of these tests brittle, and what do you do to make tests that are not brittle?
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery. Clear Measure is also happy to be a sponsor of the video podcast, Programming with Palermo. Watch, learn, and program alongside Chief Architect Jeffrey Palermo. Videos are added weekly and available on syndicated locations supporting video podcast or by visiting palermo.network. Tune in today.
So, yeah, that's sort of a term, brittleness, that I came across early on. I'm not sure when I heard it, but that essentially
refers... It's a pretty old term.
Yeah, it's fragile. Probably been around for a lot longer than the stuff that has been like mainstream. But essentially, when a test is brittle, it means like you can't really rely on that test. A brittle test is an unreliable test in the end. And what tends to factor into this a lot in Selenium test cases is a big factor is loading times. Of course, when you're a physical human being and you see a prompt that says our system is loading, you can recognize that that means anywhere between like instantly to about 2 or 3 seconds, maybe mm-hmm. longer if you end up coming at a bad time in the system or just starts being like heavily stressed out. But these Selenium drivers, they don't necessarily have that concept of this might take longer than expected. Mm-hmm. So if you don't properly configure your Selenium test in such a way that it's prepared for these load times to occasionally take longer than a second, and you're okay with that for whatever reason, then it will start generating test failures because it thinks what is supposed to be there is not, and will generate these assertion failures on your test code. But in reality, if you just waited like a second or two longer because it's five in the morning and the hosted servers are just spinning up for the first time, mm-hmm. then the test probably would have passed. So definitely this is where acceptance criteria sort of steps in and helps. It helps sort of remedy the situation, because if you're able to go in and say, look, we want this specific modal, for example, to take no longer than 5 seconds to load. And if it takes longer than 5 seconds for whatever reason, then that's going to be a problem. And we need to start making development efforts to speed it up.
Right.
Well, then you can pass that to the Selenium driver, and it has this sort of package alongside it, this very useful library, and where it is able to repeatedly query the web page for these four elements you're trying to find, or conditions you're trying to make sure are true. And it'll keep trying to do that for as long as you give it. So in this case, you just say, this might take at most 5 seconds.
And what's it and called?
The specific code module, I believe, is referred to as WebDriver Waits. I don't know off the top of my head the specific sort of library, but it is along the Selenium suite of like libraries, if you've ever worked on one. And there are other related third-party type of libraries as well, such as Fluent Assertions, that let you have more robust expected conditions when it comes to waiting for things like that.
Okay. Now, you also talked about some tests, they take too long and then they time out and break. What is the nature of the test that where you know you have to give it some type of timeout value? And what other types of tests do you want to say, no, I expect it to be immediate, so timeout doesn't even apply? How do you decide which scenarios should be implemented with each technique?
So that sort of, again, that speaks a little more with the BDD philosophy and making sure that like all of these tests and scenarios that you're creating are sort of happily married with the development cycle as well, because then you need to know what sort of things on your web service need to be there instantly and what needs to wait for, say, a database call or a third-party vendor's API to return some result. Like if I'm looking at a page, I'm going to see like if it's going to return, if a page loads and I'm waiting for an API to say, give me a list of questions to fill out in some form, then of course, when I'm waiting for that form to render, I'm going to give that Selenium driver like a bit of lenience to say, wait for this to load for say 10 seconds. And if not, then something might be wrong. And then after that's finished, then I should have that form like in completion according to whatever design doc or specifications I've been given. So I wouldn't want to wait like 10 seconds for each of those individual elements in that form. So definitely forego that sort of waiting philosophy and say, well, if I'm supposed to have that form all at once, then just don't wait at all. You don't need to wait at all, because if you're still waiting, then let's say it doesn't show up, it's not going to show up after 10 seconds, 20 seconds. It's not going to show up after 10 years. That form's just going to be wrong no matter what.
Yeah.
And so you have to make that decision of how long you're willing to wait. In this case, I'm not willing to wait. If it's not there, it's wrong.
That's a good point. I remember SurveyMonkey has kind of been around for so long. A lot of people have used SurveyMonkey just for lots of different surveys. And when downloading the responses, it's almost like it doesn't matter how many survey responses you get. They always say, we're going to send you an email when your downloaded file is ready. And if it's really small, you immediately check your email and it's already there. But if you had thousands and thousands of survey responses, it might take several minutes. And so if we're manually testing that type of thing, well, a human knows, okay, let me go and check the email. All right, let me take a break and I'll come back and check the email. But at some point you say, look, it's been an hour and it's still not here, or whatever unreasonable value, and say, we got a problem here. We need to speed this up. So when you're thinking about this test, I can understand Selenium is going to click a button, do stuff on the web page to request the survey results. But the tricky part, then you have to write some code that knows how to go into an email inbox and make sure that an email was received.
Exactly.
How do you think about drawing the boundaries of a test and say, okay, this is in scope of the test and these other things are just not a part of it?
That sort of also applies to a lot of other unit testing as well, where how do you know when to stop unit testing if, say, like you make this API client for this vendor service that you're calling, which is essentially you sort of stop baking a Selenium test when you stop having control over like what gets shown. So to use that SurveyMonkey sort of example, I wouldn't write a Selenium test to go into an email client because, you know, let's say that email is driven by some sort of test case where you're just putting in some like random email as a filler data field. Well, there's no email to go to in that case. And if these sort of Selenium tests operate best when on these sort of dedicated environments just for testing. Mm-hmm. A lot of services like that also have like sort of playground or testing modes where you can make the API calls on the back end, but nothing actually happens. So you're not affecting like billing or making bad calls while you're making like automated tests or manual tests. So honestly, it seems like a waste of time to sort of think about trying to go make a Selenium test that leaves the realm of your app to try and perform something outside of it.
So you would stop at verifying that the system dropped the file somewhere and sent an email notification, but you would not go and try to pull in some email service to make sure that it was received. Is that, am I hearing that right?
Yeah, that's where I personally would draw the line. And I'm not sure. I don't think there'd be many people who would try and wrangle a Selenium test to do that anyway, because there's also the idea that if you're going to be generating these dedicated environments for your Selenium tests to run off of, well, you can also generate a sort of like feature flag type of system that lets you generate like debug messages that let you know that, hey, we queried this external service and it returned a 200 okay status, or it'll say 401 unauthorized or whatever it ends up being. And that's where you can let the Selenium tests be able to test something because you've made something that helps to verify. And if you don't want that granular of detail to appear in your production environment, well, then you just turn that flag off when you deploy to production through some configuration setting, and everything looks all pretty and nice. And you can tell in production when it's working because the email won't get sent or the payment won't go through or whatever other different services you end up needing to sort of work through.
Yeah, good point. Now, on the web driver side, you had mentioned, you know, a please wait or a button showing up at some time. In the browser, since Selenium opens up a browser and looks for buttons to click and text boxes to type in and whatnot, what is your preferred method of finding a DOM element? You've got, you know, the CSS and the XPath and the ID, but yet you talked about brittle tests that, you know, stop working. So what have you found is just the best trade-off? What's your go-to method for finding the right DOM element?
Honestly, and this might be a controversial opinion, I think if you're like dedicating your team or teams to having these Selenium tests and saying like, we want to generate automated front-end tests for our system, then if you're going to be using Selenium to find these elements that need to be tested, then you need to have some sort of defined within your development, like design, a defined and consistent way of being able to find that element that is intentionally like put into the actual front end. So the client I'm working on, the way they've done it is they've used the built-in like data attributes that you can put on any sort of HTML element.
Like the data dash attributes?
Yeah, the data dash attributes. And they've assigned that anything with this data dash testing sort of attribute will be where we put in labels for a Selenium driver to find that element. And so the QA team is able to sort of own how we sort of name those different elements and sort of the naming conventions, when to reuse them, how we want to go about reusing them if we want to, and how to get around those reused names when going into Selenium. Because if you want to use like anything else, like let's say you want to go through, like just find what the X path is to reach that element just on its own already, that already opens up another potential point where the test is going to become unreliable, not within the sort of test itself, but throughout the development. Because let's say your XPath checks for like a CSS class on an element. Well, Bootstrap exists and it does styling based off of class names that you pass into an element. So if you say that the class name should be a payment button or whatever, well, you go through it and have this major overhaul in the front end design, and now the class has payment button, but also BTN, BTN large, BTN primary, or whatever sort of styling you have for another type of style sheet design. And now your tests are failing, and you're not sure why, because you see that this payment button element is there, but the way you've implemented your search is it checks if that's the only class that's there, or if that's, or if it's maybe your button used to be an anchor tag and now it's an actual button element.
Yeah. I'm reminded of the single responsibility principle applied to this. If I'm expanding on your point, the CSS classes should be visual styling, make it look a certain way, as opposed to a functional test handle. Whereas what you're doing is you're creating a new allowed HTML attribute that has no other responsibility except to be a test handle. And so you're giving every attribute a single responsibility, and other things can change, but they'll only change because of why they needed to change, not two reasons or two effects that a change would cause.
Yeah, exactly. So that's sort of why, like, I'm of the opinion that when you start implementing these automated Selenium tests on your front end, you sort of start paying more attention to your front end for the purposes of making sure those Selenium tests are able to do their job. So let's say there's a major overhaul of some web page and you delete a button. You see, oh, that button had this data dash testing attribute applied to it. That means a Selenium test is most likely touching that and will fail trying to find it. I need to apply this attribute to whatever this button is being replaced by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is good stuff. As we kind of reach the end of our time here, are there any rough edges around Selenium that just flat out don't work the way they need to, and you just kind of avoid and do a workaround, just for people who are learning Selenium to be aware of?
When it comes to rough edges around Selenium itself, it's not necessarily something that doesn't work, but it's something that definitely always causes like just a sudden road bump in the test cycle. And that's especially when you're testing on Chrome browsers. I know this happens with that frequently. There's this common problem, and anyone who's worked with Selenium is probably groaning right now as they heard me say Chrome. And that's when versions of Chrome sort of automatically update on your like dedicated pipeline environments, or even just on your own personal computer that you're working on. And you see a Selenium test that starts, it begins running, and then doesn't even open up Chrome because it says the version of Chrome driver that you have installed for this project is like 105, and you have Chrome version 107 installed. Please update. I've definitely heard of some people making their own sort of workarounds where they have like little batch scripts that detect the version of Chrome on this machine and get the proper Chrome driver installed. And instead of using that like sort of built-in library from Selenium that gives you the Chrome driver, just opening that driver through like the built-in .NET, like open this program type of functionality. That's something that definitely gets annoying because that gives you test failures when there's nothing wrong with the tests. That's sort of the one thing that I come across mostly. Anything else, it's, I guess you can say it's a little bit of Selenium's fault for being the way that it is, but it also sort of exposes how like little we actually sort of carefully design front end structures and how that sort of is like, I know there's, when I was working on Showworks, there was a drop down element or whatever that sort of loads its data on demand. And sort of how the implementation did that is it wouldn't call the database or whatever was grabbing that data until you physically open that dropdown. Mm-hmm. And that creates a lot of weirdness, and that weirdness leads to a lot of DOM manipulation. And that leads to another sort of common sort of shrugging point went to Selenium development, which is stale elements. Whenever the DOM is changed between you grabbing that element from the Selenium driver for your code and you interacting with it, that element might be different. And Selenium says, well, since it might be different, we're going to assume it is and say that it's stale. Please grab a fresh copy. And that happens a lot where you need to make sure you're grabbing Selenium elements right as you need them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point. Man, there's a lot of this here. We could go on for a long time, but
exactly.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with us what you've been working on and what you've learned around full system testing using Selenium. This is a lot of good stuff. I'm sure it's useful for a lot of people. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure being here. I enjoy talking about this stuff and I enjoy working on this stuff. Even if on some of the more painful days, it seems like you want to just go out into the woods and chop wood for the rest of your life. But right. It's all fun in the end.
Fantastic. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you. And dear listener, until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.